It's time to check in with Paul Quigley. Now, Paul Quigley is living with retinitis pigmentosa and recently fully lost his sight and moved to a new area. And that throws up some challenges. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Simon.
And we were talking off air about some of the challenges. When you have no sight or little sight and you move to a new area, it's very easy to become quite isolated, isn't it?
It certainly is. And I think one of the main challenges I found moving into a new area was that as a guy who is very much into fitness, I had to find a new route to the gym, Simon.
You big stud, you. So even how do you select a gym? That as well, isn't it? The things like that.
Absolutely. Well, you taught me well, sir. Well, I think finding the gym really, for me, you know, I'm a white cane warrior, so I kind of, you know, thrash the pavement with my white cane like a knight without his steed and, you know, move out the way, people. Anyway, so yeah, I was charging. One of my priorities when I moved from my old house, I used to have to, when I bore you with the details, I cut to the chase. I used to have to use public transport, get on the tram. There's a tram in the Greater Manchester area. I used to use that. And that's great because it's flat. You kind of walk up a flat gangway, which is like a ramp, really. And then the train is the platform is flush with the actual tram carriage. So you don't, you know, it's lovely. It's flat, everything's flat. It's perfect. And once you've mapped it out in your head and you cane just basically make sure there's no obstacles that weren't there last time that are there now. That's kind of what the white cane does. It doesn't actually put an eyeball on the end of it, and contrary to popular belief, it doesn't. I wish it did. This was all different because I moved to a new location. It didn't have the tram. There was a bus route back to the old gym. Fortunately, the network of gyms I'm in happens to have another branch which was much nearer actually to where I physically live geographically, and so I thought, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet, get the white cane out, become the white cane warrior, and do it on Shanks's pony down the street, you know, on foot. So what worked out the route, you know, left right down here 100 yards and I mapped it all out. And of course, then when you actually go and do it for the first time, it's nothing like it looks on the Google Maps.
Yeah, well, take us back a bit. Yeah, take us back, because that sounds very straightforward. But planning your route when you can't see and when you haven't done the journey is quite complicated, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is. Because in your mind's eye, visual pyramid, but we don't have them. What we kind of do, it's not. It never feels or the sort of the quite the number of the twists and turns of roads and pavements are never the same. There are bollards where you don't expect, and parked cars. Of course, they always are the nightmare for blind people with canes. Is a parked car that's up on the curb. That wasn't on the map, was it? I mean, so there's all sorts of obstacles, and there are sort of bicycles whizzing past you and all that sort of stuff as well. So yeah, you really have to. It's a bit like, I call myself the blind Bear Grylls, because it's like an adventure every time. They're always different every time. It's never the same. It's never the same. So you have to expect the unexpected and never expect that the journey's going to be the same. So just arriving at your destination is part of the mental challenge. And then eventually, you know, you get to the gym, in my case, and you work out for the best part of, you know, 3 hours or, you know, an hour on the treadmill, which, you know, I've had coaching when in induction course with the staff there. So I know how it works and where to fumble around on the dial to press the on and off button, and then of course when you're jogging along like what's his name, Hussein Bolt, and you think, oh my god, if I hit the wrong button, I'm gonna catapult myself through the window. So I mean, there's loads of different things, but it's an adventure. The alternative, of course, people, is to sit on your bottom. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to have spreading disease. I want to stay fit and healthy into my senior years. So yeah, it's an incredible adventure, but it's well worth it, because that sense of satisfaction, as with anything when you're visually impaired, when you put yourself up against it and, you know, do things that you would really rather not, the payback is that it gives you the confidence to do then something else, you know. And I think that's why it's worth doing, even for simple things like getting to the corner shop, or in my case, going to the gym 3 times a week.
See, I have peripheral vision, as you know, and so I like to think, well, I can get around reasonably well, but I get lost very easily for some reason now, even though I'm in areas that I know or I've known for years, I don't recognise things the same way. And I don't think if people who have no experience of sight loss, your experience and any of you that use a cane can really appreciate. You have to know your route in your head, don't you? You have to know exactly every corner, every turn, and if you get distracted, it can throw you right off.
Yes, it can. It absolutely can. Even if someone comes up to you and says, oh, do you want any help? You have to sort of literally get an idea of what your bearings are. Because if you come away from that encounter with someone and you kind of, woof, you know, straight into a lamppost, even with a white cane, of course, Jane, who taught me how to use the white cane, it's Tameside Social Services. Name drop there for Jane Catani, Tameside Social Services VI team. Thank you, Jane. Without my white cane, of course, if I lost it, I'd be absolutely stranded, totally stranded. So it's a complete lifeline, that thing. But you have to remember in your mind exactly where the lampposts are, because that's what you know, as I say, you don't see these things, you know, literally you don't get any indication on an audio description of a map of where the lampposts are. I mean, they're not created as such for VI people and blind people. They're created for everybody. So it'll just say turn right at the next turn. For us, on going on the pavement alongside the road, of course, there's any number of different shops, even some shops that have those little signposts outside where these are the newspaper, and you have to navigate. You hit those, you have to navigate around those. You've got people parked at bikes and motorcycles and all sorts of things, and they change on a day-to-day basis. So there's never a day where you can literally go onto autopilot and just sort of drift off into la la land thinking about whatever you want to think. You've got to have your wits about you and be vigilant. That's quite mentally taxing, of course. It's not for nothing that you do that. You literally have to take your life in your hand every day, because any side street could be the time that some idiot's come pulling out, doesn't spot you, he's looking the other way, and he hits you, because of course that's when you have to learn the green cross code all over for blind people and visually impaired people, which is you use your ears like you're a bat and literally just wait until you can hear a pin drop before you move, because you have to. You don't get a second chance of being flattened by a silly sod who's a bit dozy that morning whilst you're on the 8. So yeah, it's very, very risky. And the risk assessment side of things, I don't think people really appreciate how risky it can be for us, and that when we're doing it, we do need a little bit more, an extra few yards or two. So don't come too close. A lot of people tend to think that, they can hop over your cane like they're playing skipping or something with a skipping rope. They think that's funny. Fortunately, you only manage to hit him in the foot, which is a shame sometimes. But I'll talk about that another time. Apart from that, it's an experience. It's an experience. I tell you what, everyone should try it one day. Put one of those blindfold things that you can get from one of the joke shops and try it. Just try going out there and seeing what it's like. I think you're right. Just how the whole world kind of changes into a different dimension. You think, wow, because your ears suddenly come to life, and your hands, of course, your fingers become absolutely vital in making sure that when you are using your white cane and going from left to right, checking there aren't any objects that you're just about to hit, that there aren't overhanging branches as well, because overhanging branches on people's properties and things like that, residential properties, you've got branches that are, particularly at this time of year, they haven't maybe cut back the bushes, and they can get you right in the face. And sometimes if they've got little scratchy branches, they will actually cut you, they will scratch you and take you. If you haven't got sunglasses on or something to protect your eyes, you'll get injured. So that's another thing. I have been clouted in the forehead by a stupid lamppost that some truck had obviously knocked over at about 45 degree angle from the perpendicular, and I was toddling along with my stick. Yep, clock managed to go right in my head. Even though my stick found the base of it was over to the left, the actual angle of the steel pole was right over in the middle, and you can't plan for those, as a VI. And so, a call in progress to the council right for that right away, obviously. But the damage is done by then. So any number of obstacles on the way to the forum, as they used to say in Rome.
Yeah. And your first journey there, we digressed a bit, but was it successful?
No. Actually, I'm glad you said that. It wasn't, because I went on the route I particularly took. The actual gym front door, the actual entrance, was set back in a park, a very nice park. And in front of this entrance, there was another sort of made up sort of building, which wasn't on the map. And so I toddles up to this thing and was tapping away, trying to find out where the entrance. And I was about 25 yards short of where I should have been. So I actually literally walked around the building, or scraped, went back and forth about 20 minutes trying to find the entrance to this place. And eventually I gave up. I just thought, I can't find it. I'm going to have to go home, because I didn't have the number with me, and phone them up. So I phoned them up when I got back to the house, and I said, I've just tried to get in and I couldn't find my way in. And, it's nothing like when I was guided there by another person, just the mental map wasn't gelling. So they said, oh yes, I know what you've done. You've gone through to this little building. You should have gone a little bit further around to the left and then taken a right and then a left. And that's where the entrance was. It's literally behind where you were. And I thought, well, I couldn't make that out from where I was. Anyway, long story short, they said they'd send someone out next time. So they said, when are you coming down? I said, I'll be down tomorrow at such same time. And they said, okay, well, when you get in there, bring your phone and ring, and we'll we'll send someone out to sort of map you around there. So that's what I did. And then I literally, they came round and they said, this voice appeared from nowhere over to the left and said, Paul. And I thought, all right. And they came and they kind of mapped me round. And I thought, oh Lord, is this where I never would have worked this one out, because it doesn't look anything like it does on a map. There's no way you can see. And there's no one hardly around in a park. Well, a few kids playing football or whatever. But I mean, eventually, and then once you clock it once, once you register in your brain, you're fine then for that part of the route forever after. It's great. But for that one time, and you know, it was like so frustrating that you make all this effort to get out, then you spend best part of an hour achieving nothing. So, you know, it won't be the last time that happens, I'm sure, because every time you go to somewhere new, it's like a brand new experience. You don't have a chauffeur or a, you know, waiting at the door to say, you know, Mr. Quigley, would you like to come this way? That you don't always get it. Sometimes you do if you can plan ahead, but it doesn't always pan out that way. Then you're left with your own common sense, and it is frustrating, and you need to have the patience of a saint, and it's very, very difficult sometimes to actually just then keep going, but you have to. This is the way it is. So
and of course if the album takes off this year, then of course you might have a chauffeur.
Well, Simon, I know you're gainfully employed as a saxophonist in a very successful Scottish rock band, but I don't think even I could afford your services.
Do you want me chauffeuring you about? That'll be something. Right, so how's it going anyway, just before you go, the album?
Yeah, it's going great. As some of my more loyal fans know, I've been testing out a new drum machine to get some beats going with the acoustic stuff, and that's going very well. I've finished my first track. Well, not finished it. I'm actually mixing at the moment, called Melt. And it's very kind of R&B, Afrobeat kind of thing, totally different to, as you know, my more rockier background heritage. But I mean, that's still there. But I thought I'd try a little bit different for more kind of radio friendly stuff that's contemporary. And I'm finding that my type of sort of ballads that I'm writing now and the acoustic stuff lend itself particularly well to that. Because, of course, with the improvement in hi-fi systems these days and the sort of, you know, audio in general, it's a good idea to really make use of the audio spectrum, particularly, you know, as a visually impaired person, you know, we really appreciate that, don't we? We really kind of, it makes music and sound a lot more colourful the more of the sound spectrum you use. And so I didn't really plumb the depths of really low frequency stuff, because in the acoustic, you know, the bottom string on acoustic is, you know, it's quite low, but it's not really going to be, it's not subwoofer bass, is it? It's not down there. Whereas I thought I really could do with having some really deep bass to underpin what I'm doing. And a lot of people says, well, you know, why don't you just get the band back together again? Well, I may well do, but even rock bands, bass kicks, they're not really that low frequency. Not really into bottom end at the moment, were he? And so that's what I'm doing now. The song's going really well. I'm moving on to another song hopefully soon that I've just written. So as I say, the plan is still the end of the summer to get the album out, and it's at facebook.com/PaulQuigleyUK, twitter.com/hellsbells_UK. So check me out, and I'll let you know what the links are soon to actually check out some of the sounds, people.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you keeping us up to date with everything, and I'm always interested in what you're up to. So,
absolutely, yes.
Been great chatting with you, Paul,
and you, Simon. Thank you.
We will catch up in a couple of weeks.
We will indeed,
unless there's something earth-shattering that happens.
I'll let you know. Cheers, mate.
See you.